TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Vandana Shiva, The Future of Food and Farming in a Pandemic World, Part 1 of 2. On August 17, 2020, the University of British Columbia in Canada invited Dr. Vandana Shiva to hold the first online masterclass with students from UBC's Faculty of Land and Food Systems. Vandana Shiva remembers with fondness her time as a student in Canada. She was trained as a physicist before shifting to research in science, technology, and environmental policy. She earned her PhD in quantum theory at the University of Western Ontario. Currently, she's based in Dehradun, India. She has authored over 20 books, including The Violence of the Green Revolution, Monocultures of the Mind, Soil Not Oil, and Oneness versus the 1%. Here is Ricky Yada, Dean and Professor, Faculty of Land and Food Systems. He begins with a land acknowledgement.
Good morning, everyone. Hello. My name is Ricky Yada. I'm a professor and dean. Let me start off by saying that I hope you and your friends and family are safe and well during these challenging times. I hope you're coping. And so thank you for joining us today. It's my pleasure today, though, to be the MC and to welcome everyone to this special UBC Connects Masterclass with Dr. Vandana Shiva. So before we start the program, I'd like to do a land acknowledgement. And I'd like to acknowledge that the UBC campuses at Point Grey, Robson Square, and the Okanagan are situated on the traditional unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh, and in the territory of the Tsleil-Waututh's Okanagan Nation. So with that, I'll ask our IT people to bring greetings from our President and Vice Chancellor at the University of British Columbia, Santa Ono.
Thank you, Ricky. And thank you as well to the Land and Food Systems students who are participating in today's master class. Dr. Vandana Shiva is an Indian scholar and environmental activist dedicated to protecting biodiversity. Her work looks at how people can produce more food, reduce hunger, cultivate better health, and reduce disease and poverty through conservation of biodiversity. She has been recognized for her contributions in the fields of women and the environment, biotechnology, and intellectual property rights, and ecological issues related to agriculture. Dr. Shiva is one of the leaders and board members of the International Forum on Globalization and a figure in the global solidarity movement, which she refers to as the Earth Democracy Movement. Dr. Shiva once said, quote, "What we owe each other is a celebration of life and to replace fear and hopelessness with fearlessness and joy," close quote. Words to ponder during these unprecedented times. All the best for today's masterclass.
Thank you, Santa, for those wonderful words. And again, thank you, Dr. Shiva, for joining us. Over the next hour, myself and the students from our faculty will have the opportunity to participate in a discussion with Dr. Shiva around the future of food and farming in a pandemic world. Dr. Shiva, thank you so very much for taking time to be with us today. We are so grateful for this opportunity.
My greetings from India, from Doon Valley, from my valley of my birth, to all of you who've joined this masterclass. Now, my PhD thesis was actually from Canada, from the University of Western Ontario, from an amazing program called the Colloquium on Quantum Theory, an interdisciplinary degree which brought together philosophers and logicians and physicists and mathematics. And I worked on non-separability and non-locality in quantum theory. So potential and non-separation is the training of my doctoral work. we are in the midst of a pandemic, and we don't even know when it'll end. But it is so related to the issue of food and farming. It's related to the last half century of how the food production system has shifted and how the trade in food has shifted. We are literally being linked worldwide through the spread of disease as this particular COVID-19 pandemic. When we invade the homes of other species, manipulate plants and animals for commercial profits and greed, and spread monocultures. New diseases are being created because a globalized, industrialized, inefficient food and agriculture model is invading into the ecological habitat, violating limits of ecosystems and the integrity of species. Corona, Ebola, Zika, MERS, the list is huge, 300, just in the last 30 years. We've created a disease-creating food system. And not only are these 300 new infectious diseases causing harm, they're added to the chronic diseases that are the comorbidity factors, diabetes, obesity, cancer. The rates of mortality shoot up from 1% to 9.2%. How did we get here? Why did we have to start invading the Amazon and the rainforests of Indonesia to grow GMO soya? And one would think that this is related to feeding the world. Well, no one should be hungry. If so much expansion of soya and palm oil was going to solve the hunger problem, 1 billion people are hungry, 250 million are being added with the lockdown. According to the World Food Program, every day 300,000 will die if we don't make corrections in our economic system, our food system, and how we grow our food and how we trade it. Is the GMO soya invading the Amazon giving us food? No, only 10% of the GM soya and corn of the world goes into the human food system directly. 90% is biofuel and animal feed. And more biofuel will not solve hunger. In fact, my book, Soil Not Oil, shows it won't even solve the climate problem. 80% of the food we eat comes from small farms. This is FAO data that use only 25% of the land. Farming is care for the land. It's love for the land. It's not an activity to extract from the land. And that is why the Australian Aboriginal people who are called Bushmen were actually farmers for 60,000 years. In Asia, India, China, we've been farmers for 40 centuries. Even the Amazon was not forest people. They were gardeners. All the new archaeological evidence is bringing this out. And no one had to invade. We could take care of the same piece of land. I have visited the spice gardens of the Western Ghats. Generation on generation on generation of spice growers have grown spices in the same patch of land. Where did this invasive system, expanding system, come from? Came from the colonial spirit of invasion, conquest, grabbing other people's land. As Cecil Rhodes said so clearly, you know, he founded Rhodesia. We must find new lands from which we can easily obtain raw materials and at the same time exploit the cheap slave labor that is available from the natives of the colonies. The colonies should also provide a dumping ground for the surplus goods we produce. This economy is what's causing the pandemic. And we have to make a shift in this. It's not just causing the health problem, it's caused the climate emergency. I mentioned my book, Soil Not Oil, the extinction crisis. The Intergovernmental Panel on Biodiversity has shown if we don't change the way we do agriculture, we'll be extinct. 200 species are driven to extinction every day. 1 million are threatened. The two questions that keep coming up repeatedly, because this has been the narrative that has gone hand in hand. Now, I'm not trained in agriculture. That's not really my background. As I mentioned, my training is physics and my PhD is foundations of quantum theory. But I had to look at agriculture when in 1984, Punjab, the land where I'd done my MSc honors in physics, it was a peaceful state in the 70s. By 84, it was exploding in violence. 30,000 people had been killed. And a very, very important connection was there between Canada and this problem. A plane called Kanishka was blown up in that whole period. That same year, Bhopal, the disaster took place. And I offered to the United Nations University, for whom I was doing a program, I want to look at this. My book, Violence of the Green Revolution, was written in that period. Two very dominant myths. How do we do farming? And what are the costs of bad farming? Is the myth that it's producing more food? It's not. It's producing more commodities. And as I said, those commodities go for biofuel and animal feed, not for feeding people. The measure of productivity is so wrong. The only inputs counted are land and labor, as if they're inert, dead inputs, when they are the only two creative forces in an ecological process of producing food, because growing food is a biological ecological process. And then the metric of yield per acre, my whole book, Green Violence of the Green Revolution, written in the 80s, shows it's a mismeasure. If you shift to biodiversity analysis, we grow more food with biodiversity. Indigenous people did it. People in North America weren't just roaming the prairies, they were gardening. Three Sisters, wild plants. I've had beautiful dinners with indigenous people. Hundreds of plants served. So yield per acre, pseudo-productivity, 10 units of inputs used to produce 1 unit of food, that is pseudo-efficiency. Ecological agriculture uses 1 unit of input to produce 10 units of good food, not just for human beings, for our animals, for the butterflies, for the earthworms. And then is the issue of cost. Again and again and again, I'm asked, oh, but organic is too costly. Organic is for the elite. Therefore, we must have junk food that gives us diabetes and obesity. It's the only affordable thing. Well, the cost of food is as manipulated as the yield and productivity analysis. I've done a book for which our agriculture minister wrote the foreword. We did two cost accounting. And when you add the three factors that are always left out of the price that actually made high cost production look cheap, we realized that actually industrial globalized food is too costly for the earth to afford, it's too costly for societies to afford. The three big deceptions that go in are subsidies. Look at $700 billion of subsidies go into distorting the prices in the global food system. Monopsonies, the monopoly in buying. My analysis has shown once the Walmarts and the supermarkets come in, a farmer gets 1%. Of what the consumer price. No wonder Walmart can say always cheap prices, because they're cheating the farmer. And third is externalities. Externalities to environmental damage, to our health damage. If you look at the costs of diabetes, cancer, neurodegenerative diseases, it's a system we can't afford. We have a better way to move forward. A way where we take care of the health of the planet, our own health. We regenerate the soil, we regenerate biodiversity, we regenerate our health, we regenerate democracy, we generate what I call living economies. That's what I've been doing for the last 35 years, and I know it's totally doable. The world can have enough food while we protect the planet, while we conserve biodiversity. We don't have to invade in the Amazon. Every backyard can be a garden.
Thank you, Dr. Shiva, for those inspiring words. And now I'm going to turn it over to our very wonderful students. So Amy, I'll turn it over to you to actually start the questioning period.
Awesome, thanks, Ricky. And thanks, Dr. Shiva, for that awesome opening this morning. It really feels special to be here in conversation with you. Starting off on maybe a more personal note, I'm curious what positive changes you've had in your life and maybe something that you'll carry with you after the pandemic passes. And also, I'm curious where you're calling us from this morning.
Well, it's night for me, and I'm calling you from a childhood home. I'd return here for home quarantine because I had to cut back my lecture tour in Europe, and I had to be in home quarantine. And then in the middle, they announced a lockdown, which is carrying on still. So I am enjoying real mangoes that my mother planted. They're delicious. All the breeding that's been done has taken mangoness out of mango. You get pukey, yellow mangoes that have no taste, no flavor. We've got 8 mango trees in my mother's garden. Each has a different flavor.
Sounds so lovely.
And I'm sitting in what was my mother's cowshed. And I was hesitating about that, Ken, you know. I said, I've saved the whole valley. I've saved so much by doing work in vacation. I want to do this work. And academics doesn't let me. So my mother said, chuck your job. Come home. Take the cowshed. Turn it into your institute. So the Research Foundation for Science, Technology, and Ecology was born in this cowshed. So I've come back home. I'm surrounded by trees my mother planted, the bees and the butterflies. Peace, total peace. So what's changed for me is my travel. But then with these interactions, I'm probably interacting even more with wonderful young people like you.
Awesome. That sounds really great. Some really nice changes. So diving right into our conversation then this morning, and I'll actually the virtual microphone over to my fellow panelist, Kara.
Hello, good morning. Your speech was so inspirational, Dr. Shiva. And so I guess my first question, kind of following on some of the things you said, as we've been learning for such a long time, it seems like, and as we've really been shown during the COVID crisis, there are so many problems in our food system, the way we grow food, the way we distribute food. So I guess my question for you is, what do you think the priority is, should be, or what is your greatest priority coming out of this crisis that we should be focusing on or that you want to focus on in changing the food system?
Well, two things, you know. What I've learned about food is that the food web is the web of life. Now, in a web, you never say which point is important. In a web, every point is important. All relationships are important. And so for anyone who wants to work on this issue, just be the strand and weave the web and strengthen it and heal wherever it's broken. Whatever I will do now is connected to what I've done in the last 35 years. I have had to work on agriculture by default to address the violence and create a nonviolent paradigm. But like I said, we've saved seeds, we grow more food in Navdanya, we offer a course. But I think the two big challenges we face is there's a rush to push industrialization of agriculture to the next level. And this next level is talking about farming without farmers, digital agriculture, removing everyone from the land. But ecologically, that's not going to work because you need people to take care of the land. You can spray Roundup a little more efficiently with a drone. But to be able to give back the gratitude to Mother Earth and reestablish our Earth citizenship is what humans are called to do and must do. The second big challenge is, I talked about how the pandemic and the chronic diseases that are amplifying the crisis are related to an industrial food system with fake ingredients. And now those who made big money in the 20 years, 25 years of deregulated commerce called free trade, WTO, paid no taxes, became the billionaires. The tech billionaires want to be drivers of the food system. And they want to be drivers of a fake food system. We should have farms for food. We should have farms for raw material that will be constituted in labs And just like we made a mess with biofuels, where we created refineries of biofuels with a very negative energy efficiency, we will create a negative amplification of an inefficient food system, but worse, we will create more disease. Because what I've learned, and you know, everything I've learned is by doing and seeking. I've learned nothing by rote, nothing. I've learned now that the biodiversity in the world outside matches the biodiversity in our gut. And disease is the assault on the biodiversity outside and the gut microbiome. Now, every time you try and cheat on food, something in the gut microbiome says, sorry, that was cheating, and there's one new chronic disease. So I say, before you run to see how with 14 patents you can have an impossible burger, why don't you pause and look at what we've learned? Like I said, it's a 50-year mistake. Fossil fuel, poison, chemicals, 30 years of learning, its impact. Look at what humanity has learned about agroecology, biodiversity, health, and don't rush into the next extractive profiteering, killing the planet, killing farmers, and killing our health.
So what I'm hearing is not necessarily going backwards, but progressing in a way that does consider the past, everything we've learned, everything we've done right and wrong. And I really love that. Part of what you said about incorporating people, keeping people incorporated in the farming, leads me to one of the other questions that I had, because earlier you did mention that farmers, when food ends up in Walmart or in a superstore, farmers only get 1%. So that value of people and of farmers has kind of been lost. And I think alongside the COVID crisis, we've been seeing major social outcries and communities coming together to demand equality and reconciliation for Indigenous and racial issues that have happened for centuries. So I was wondering if you had any ideas or perspectives or opinions on how, as a young farmer or a graduate or someone kind of entering the food system, what's the best way to incorporate reconciliation or promote equality in the work that we do, considering that we need to bring people back to the center of food production? Do you have any recommendations going forward with how to keep that as part of the core value?
Two quick things, Amy. You know, I think this whole issue of a linear trajectory of the mechanical mind has so destroyed our way of thinking. Even in atomic physics, we know the atom has a nucleus and it has an electron going around. The electron is moving. But if it was not in the stationary state, it would collapse into the nucleus. So movement, dynamics, evolution, and being stationary in terms of stability, sustainability, we've treated sustainability as staticness and disruption and destruction as the power of creation. Totally misplaced. You know, this is the reason I've done so many books on ecofeminism, my book Staying Alive, which, by the way, was written right in this office in the days of manual typewriters. I've seen the generation. Manual typewriters, electric typewriters, computers. Quite fascinating in these short 40 years, how much change has happened. In terms of the issue of young people, we are facing three emergencies. Pandemic and the health emergency, the planetary health emergency, including extinction, including climate change. And we are facing, I would call it a work emergency. I don't use the word employment, or I don't use the word jobs, because these are vocabulary of an industrial system. Find me an Indigenous person who uses those words. The same industrial agriculture model that worked on a pseudo-efficiency where productivity was defined by getting rid of people and replacing them with energy slaves. That system had to make it look like farming was a primitive activity. And that same narrative is carrying on. Farming without farmers is human progress. But if we think of where did the lasting societies, the permanent societies, place farming as the highest vocation. Even my civilization says there is no vocation that higher than farming, and trade and commerce was the lowest. So taking care of the land is the highest vocation, and it's a switch in our brain. You know, it's a cultural act. Like you're talking about inequality and racism, is there white superiority built into essentialism of whiteness and maleness? No, it's a construct, very violent construct. So how do we bring equality and dignity back into the farming system by first realizing we are all Earth citizens, therefore all equal, different but equal, like the microbe and the mammal are different, but they're equal in terms of their right to live. Secondly, not treating work in that very deceitful way as something you exploit and extract from, that labor is something you extract from. Rather, that work is the gift through which we become one with the earth. I spend a lot of time thinking about this. Everything else we get from the earth, everything else. Only in growing food can we give back a little portion of her, what she gives, a seed. She'll give us 1,000 seeds, some of which we can eat. Little bit of the organic matter, she'll give us food forever. It is an amazing system where all we have to do is be grateful and the generosity continues. So it's these cultural shifts. And my book, Oneness Versus 1%, is finally coming out in North America in August. And it is tracing a lot of this construct. It's the subtitle is Shattering Illusions, Seeding Freedom.
I love that. Thank you so much. I really appreciate everything you just said.
That was Dr. Vandana Shiva in an online masterclass with students from the Faculty of Land and Food Systems at the University of British Columbia in Canada. They met on August 17, 2020, during the COVID pandemic. Vandana sheltered in place in Doon Valley, India, on the site of Navdanya, a nonprofit that she founded on the farm her mother cared for. Navdanya is dedicated to the protection of biological and cultural diversity. This meeting went on for almost an hour and was so warm and inspiring that I was unable to edit it down to 29 minutes and decided to divide the material into two segments. So please come back when TUC Radio returns or find part two of Vandana Shiva, The Future of Food and Farming in a Pandemic World, for free on TUC Radio's website, or find it under this title on YouTube. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.